Hello, everyone. I'm Ian McAllister.
And I'm Jamie Adams, and this is Brainwaves episode 141, bringing you the best in tabletop gaming news. These are the headlines for the week of the 29th of April, 2024. Once, twice, three times Embracer. Wizards misplaces its CEO. And the age-old tale of a duck versus Goliath. All this and more on this episode of Brainwaves.
Embracer Group, the Swedish company that owns Asmodee and a whole bunch of computer game studios, has announced a new strategic direction. The company will split into three separate entities: Asmodee Group, Coffee Stain and Friends, and Middle-earth Enterprises and Friends. Lars Wingefors, CEO of Embracer, explained the three companies in an open letter accompanying the announcement.
Asmodee is the leading developer, publisher, and distributor of tabletop games on the planet. Coffee Stain and Friends will become the leading and most innovative developer of community-driven games for PC, console, and mobile. Middle-earth Enterprises and Friends will be developing immersive world-class entertainment IPs, including the iconic Lord of the Rings, leveraging in-house AAA capabilities and formidable partnerships.
As part of this restructuring, Asmodee is taking on a €900 million loan that Embracer Group will use to refinance previous debts the company had. This basically means they have taken on a new loan with lower interest to pay off an older loan, best as we understand it. The loan that Asmodee now has on its books is ring-fenced with no recourse to Embracer Group. So that basically means that it's all on Asmodee's assets and funds, and Embracer are not liable for the loan. Kiki Wallilund, chair of the board of Embracer Group, said,
"The board of directors, together with executive management, propose to transform Embracer Group into three separate listed companies. This transformation is an important step in unlocking shareholder value. With this new structure, the three entities will be able to focus on executing their core strategies and leveraging their own strengths, providing more differentiated and distinct equity stories to both existing and new shareholders. After careful evaluation of various strategic alternatives, we strongly believe that this decision will benefit all stakeholders and position us for continued success in the future."
Lars Wingefors, the CEO of Embracer, finishes the open letter by saying this:
"I would especially like to thank all the employees standing with us in the past challenges. Today marks the first day of the new journey. Let's join it together and create the future."
Now, we would like to remind listeners that Embracer fired about 8% of its workforce during the last year. That's about 1,400 people. Shuttered major game studios and cancelled a variety of computer game projects. This was all because they missed out on a $2 billion loan from the Saudi Investment Fund. Now, I have no idea what this means for Asmodee. There has been a lot of fear, speculation, and rumour amongst sort of board game social media. Splitting it off certainly makes it easier for Embracer to sell it in the future, for sure. But Asmodee has been the only consistent profitable part of Embracer for at least the last couple of years. So they might sell that off in the hope that a computer game studio business turns around, but I think at the moment they're going to keep it on the books. Any thoughts, Jamie?
Yes, but none that are broadcastable.
Fair enough.
All I will say is, and you know, maybe my... no politics, please. We don't want politics in board games. You know, we don't like politics, you know. But all I'm going to say is just, yeah, chair the board of Embracer. Just going, it's unlocking shareholder value.
Yeah, it's all about the entire statement, the entire reason for them doing it, it's all about going for the shareholders because that's what these big corporations do. And it is slightly sick making a lot of that stuff, especially considering how Lars Wingefors signs off that and all the people they fired. Yeah.
This is really pretentious, and I don't care how pretentious it sounds, but the famous novel, The Romance of the Three Kingdoms. The empire, long divided, must unite. Long united, must divide. Thus it has ever been. There we go. There's Embracer Group in a nutshell. It gathered all these companies and these studios together. And then they went, oh yeah, we ain't going to deal with this. We're going to have to split it up into, well, three separate groups, two of whom have and friends, and Asmodee who don't. So nobody wants to be friends with Asmodee because they're the one making the money.
Seems that way. Anyway, from one big company to another.
Cynthia Williams, CEO of Wizards of the Coast, has announced her intention to resign. She told Hasbro, the parent company of Wizards of the Coast, of her move on the 15th of April, and it became effective on the 26th of April. Cynthia joined Wizards of the Coast on February 25th, 2022. Her previous job had been with Microsoft as general manager and vice president of the gaming ecosystem commercial team. Over her time at the company, Wizards of the Coast has seen its share price fluctuate and dealt with a tumultuous 2023, which started with the attempt to roll back the OGL, the Open Game License. Wizards also came under fire for the use of AI art in their products, but also saw the immense success of the licensed D&D computer game Baldur's Gate 3, published by Larian Studios. A Hasbro representative told tabletop news site Dicebreaker,
"We're excited for Cynthia to take the next step in her career and grateful for the contributions she has made in her more than 2 years at Wizards and Hasbro. We wish her the absolute best in her next endeavor. We have started the search for our next president of Wizards of the Coast and hope to have a successor in place soon."
As of the time of recording, no new president has currently been announced. Oh, and before we move on to our next headline, another bit of news from the Wizards corner of the hobby. Hasbro, parent company of Wizards of the Coast, reported better than expected quarter one profits. The part of the company that interests us, of course, is the gaming segment, which covers Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons, and their digital gaming offer. Sales in this segment were up 7% to $316.3 million from $295.2 in the same quarter last year. This is primarily achieved through digital offerings like Baldur's Gate 3 and Monopoly Go, alongside the growth in Magic the Gathering. Now, profit in the area of this company rose 60% to $122.8 million, mostly down to digital licensing revenue and cost management. Cost management. You may recall they fired 1,100 people in the run-up to Christmas last year, including some involved in the very profitable products that I just mentioned. Net earnings for Hasbro were $59.1 million compared to the same quarter last year when they had a $21.7 million loss. But you know, at least the shareholders will be happy. That's what matters, isn't it? It's shareholders.
I mean, a CEO leaving with such short notice, only a couple of weeks, is really, really odd. That kind of thing usually takes months, if not sometimes up to a year. That's a really strange thing. There's definitely something going on there, but I don't know what it is. Because CEOs just do not get to leave companies that quickly.
I mean, I could speculate, but I don't really want to.
No, I'm not going to speculate either. There just is obviously something weird going on there. I don't know whether that's been planned for a while. That's a possibility, but it seems like very, very strange for them to have announced it and then her to be leaving in 2 weeks' time. That's the sort of thing you can do from a retail job, but not a CEO of a company.
Yeah. Listener, dear listener, I'm sure you've got in your mind, you might be thinking, why has Cynthia Williams decided to step down? And I'm sure you might be thinking the same things that I might be thinking. And we're not going to say it. We're just going to have a little moment to think about it. And just think of the time that Wizards of the Coast had while Cynthia Williams was at the head. Have you thought about that? Good. And just remember, see, the shareholders will be happy. That's the important thing, isn't it? That's the important thing. Oh, that's super important. Now, before I get even more cynical and sarcastic, I don't even know if that's possible, Ian has a story of truly titanic proportions that's quite quackers.
Goliath is a kids and family games publisher with a global reach and has such titles as Rummy Cub under its banner. It also has an adult game studio called Endless Games that has published TV tie-in games like The Traitors. Goliath has announced that it has acquired Lucky Duck Games, publishers of Chronicles of Crime, Kingdom Rush, and a load of other titles. Vincent Vergogine, founder of Lucky Duck Games, said,
"Goliath's entrepreneurial spirit perfectly aligns with ours. This partnership empowers us to continue investing in cutting-edge strategy games while leveraging Goliath's expansive global distribution network to reach an even broader audience of tabletop gamers."
Drakan Galad, CEO of Goliath, said,
"As a global games business, we see there are two major growth areas in games, adult party games and strategy games. Consumers and kidults particularly are playing board games like never before. This trend was already there, but the pandemic has greatly accelerated it. Vincent and the team have done an astounding job in such a short time to become a notable player in the strategy games category. We are very impressed by the games they've brought to market."
Vincent and the management team will run Lucky Duck Games as an independent studio within the Goliath group of companies. Goliath, of course, recently bought Prospero Hall, transferring the rights to those games to Goliath, but not most of the people. Thanks to Chris Priscott from our Discord for bringing this story to our attention. Now, we've predicted the merging and buying of tabletop games companies for a while now, and we've seen a little bit of that over the last couple of years, and we're just going to see more of it as the games sector grows. Bigger companies are going to want a piece of that strategy games market, the sort of hobby games market as we think of it. And yeah, we're we're just going to see more of this kind of thing. It's absolutely inevitable.
We're seeing both sides. We're seeing the acquisition. We're seeing Goliath and Lucky Duck. And then we're seeing the other side where Embracer goes, oh, we bought all those games. Ooh. Mm.
I mean, yeah, there will be definitely some splits and things like that as well down the line, I am sure. But for now, we're going to move on to the news and actually another story about companies merging.
Cool Mini or not, or Simon, as they may be more commonly known, have added a new company to their portfolio. Japan Brand was formed in 2006 to promote and produce Japanese tabletop games for the global market. Hits like Love Letter and Machikoro are under its banner. The brand will continue as an independent agent under the agreement. Japan Brand President Nomura Akio said,
"The conditions surrounding Japan's tabletop games industry have continued to change over the last 10 years. More independent designers want to exhibit their work overseas, and more buyers are visiting Tokyo Game Market from abroad. Unfortunately, social and economic circumstances make overseas distribution a far-off prospect for most independent designers. We will do our best to make sure that the world knows the immense talent we have here in Japan and what that talent is capable of."
Simon COO David Preti said of the agreement,
"Japan Brand has always been an incredible ambassador of Japanese game design to the rest of the world. This core value is extremely important to me, and we're honored to be part of that long tradition."
Fantastic. I hope it means we'll see more quite unique styles that come out of Japan. I hope to see more of that, because we saw how much Love Letter and Machikoro have taken the West by storm. I mean, you know, for a long time, Love Letter, I mean, you could get so many different variations.
Yeah, I mean, I played Newsboys, sort of Roll and Write, and Wind the Film, both sort of Japanese imports. The Wind the Film is vaguely available in the West as a game called Photograph down at Aircon, and they are really cool, interesting games, and I'm sure there's lots of really interesting games out over in Japan that we just don't get to see, so it'd be great to see more of that over here. Yeah, hope that is the case with this merger.
As you said, independent designers find it very difficult to promote things that aren't out of a small circle or in their own country. So hopefully this will give them a bit of a leg up. Because honestly, there are some independent games that I've seen, I'm sure you've seen, Ian, that you go, oh, that's interesting. And actually, very interesting in a very positive way, instead of going, oh, that's interesting. Another game about Cthulhu or zombies or cowboys.
Indeed.
To be fair, cowboys can be quite cool. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. But if it's not widely available, then how do you tell people about it? How do you get, like, how does a critic like myself, for instance, like say, you should go and buy this game. Oh, you can't, you know, that's a problem. So yeah, hopefully those kind of issues will be lessened somewhat by this matchup.
On the subject of availability there, Ian, more news from the crowdfunding tree.
Yes, Kickstarter may have been the original crowdfunding platform, but over the last few years, it's seen that dominance challenged by BackerKit and GameFound. In order to try and get back some of its lost audience, Kickstarter has recently announced the addition of late pledges as a feature on the site. While BackerKit and GameFound have had these features for a while, it has always been through third-party channels that late pledges were available to Kickstarter backers. From the press release under the headline, "Why Late Pledges?"
Often, backers come across projects they wish they'd known about sooner, and creators find post-campaign buzz they wish they could capitalize on. In the past, creators have turned to third-party services to do this, which means adding extra steps for the creators themselves and their backers. Now, we're integrating late pledges directly into Kickstarter, erasing the need for third-party players and embedding a streamlined process right where your community is already supporting you. This means creators can continue to offer rewards and engage with and expand their backer community effortlessly, while backers get another shot at supporting projects they believe in post-campaign. With late pledges, we're setting the stage for even more support and even bigger success stories. That's a future we can get behind.
Now, I honestly hadn't realized the late pledges were not really a Kickstarter thing, but to do with the back-of-house software that companies like BackerKit got started out on before they made the leap into being a platform in their own right. Now, I don't think it's enough to bring them more projects, really. I'm not sure what you think, Jamie, but it might mean more money for those companies dedicated to the platform, I guess.
Potentially.
Yeah.
I was kind of vaguely aware of late pledges, I'll be honest. I wasn't really 100% sure. I just thought it was, when you're done, you're done. And the way to get late pledge kind of stuff is, as I said, either third party, or if you're lucky to hear about it, you stick a quid in and you get the chance to upgrade later. I just you know, the shareholders will be happy.
Jamie, enough of crowdfunding and money in general, and more on to the mental health of the hobby.
I mean, you sure you want to go there?
I do.
A study from Cook University in Australia has been looking at the benefits that Dungeons & Dragons can give to its players. Alicia Merrick, Wendy Wenlee, and Dan J. Miller published their research in the Game for Health journal. That research is titled, A Study on the Efficacy of the Tabletop Role-Playing Game Dungeons & Dragons for Improving Mental Health and Self-Concept in a Community Sample. The study took 25 participants and asked them to play 8 weeks of D&D in one-hour sessions. A special scenario was created for the study, and the games were run by local GMs who had experience running the game. The study was trying to establish effects on participants' mental health over the course of the trial period. Participants were surveyed pre, mid, and post-participation in the trial. 18 of the participants also completed a further one-month follow-up survey. We'll link you to the full research so you can read it for yourself and have a look at the work. But the study concluded like this.
This study quantitatively evaluated the effects of a TTRPG D&D on mental health and self-concept among a community sample. 8 weeks of exposure to D&D was associated with significant reductions in depression, anxiety and stress, and significant gains in self-esteem and self-efficacy. These improvements were maintained at a one-month follow-up relative to baseline. The results add to a growing evidence base for the potential use of D&D as a preventative or intervention tool to promote well-being. The results provided an impetus to conduct randomized controlled trials into the topic in the future.
The research does point out this is a very small group, and there are several factors not accounted for in the range of people they could get to participate in the trial. They would like to take these ideas and do a wider trial with a broader range of participants. Now, this is a very interesting study. I mean, the use of games as a boost to mental health doesn't, you know, tabletop games, board games, card games, role-playing games.
There's been some evidence of that kind of thing for a while, for sure, and there's been various studies that we've looked at over the years.
Yeah, we've brought up studies like this before, and I think it's just nice to see some more. And as you said, you know, as you said in the study, they'd like to do a wider thing because only you're going to generally get particular groups who are going to.
As the RPG hobby gets wider, certainly, and as the hobby, and as the tabletop hobby gets wider in general, scientists are going to look at this kind of thing, sort of cultural impacts, like, is it of benefit to people? You're going to get that kind of spillover into academic research for sure. So yeah, we're going to see more of this kind of thing, and it's probably all for the good.
On the subject of Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing games, we've got some Munchkin-y news.
Now, Steve Jackson Games, the publishers of said game Munchkin, Car Wars, and a slate of other games, has announced a downturn in its financial fortunes. Reporting to its stakeholders, the company announced gross sales for 2023 were $3.5 million, down from the $4.7 million they saw in 2022. The company says that the situation is not an existential threat to its future. Steve Jackson wrote,
"Cash flow was acceptable. It was not a profitable year, though. We have identified and dealt with some of the money-losing issues. Others will be harder. We're working on it. No fear, we have plenty of runway left. I just hate to use it."
He goes on to detail some of the highs and lows the company experienced over the year, the turnover of staff, and most interestingly, a part on the state of the industry. He starts this segment by saying,
"It is a golden age for gamers, with more variety and sheer volume than ever before. But it's a tough time for even the biggest publishers. All that volume represents competition. Some companies have had to do massive layoffs or cutbacks, but others thrive."
He then continues by highlighting the increased cost of printing in China, the strain on the global distribution network, and how repeated printing delays pushed many of their releases into 2024. Jackson publicly announces the priorities for 2024 and reflects on those they mentioned for 2023. The company is focusing on getting projects out the door that they are already committed to. This is alongside more Munchkin releases and a secret project that Jackson says will be announced by the end of the year. One of the reasons we like to bring this kind of thing up is that I personally really like the frankness of this, and it's good to see a games company talk openly about triumphs, successes, failures, and the challenges that face a publisher of their size. The other company that does this on the regular is, of course, Stonemaier Games, that we've reported on several times, because it's really hard for a podcast like ourselves and just people in general to get information about how tabletop games companies are doing. So it's really good to see a company being open and honest with that kind of information, because it just helps other companies figure out if they're doing good, what they need to do, if they can seek help, you know, that kind of thing. It's great. I really like to see it. And yeah, hopefully Steve Jackson has a better year this year.
I mean, you say that, and we do, you know, we report on companies like Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro, We report on things like Games Workshop, you know, who've been having, you know, a bumper year over the last couple of years. But of course, they are very corporate and they've got their own way of doing things. And seeing Stonemaier and Steve Jackson Games going, yep, you know what, this is it. Yep. I'm trying to take a bit more of a reflective look. You know, I'm a more of a kind of practical look at the state of the industry and our workings as a company as well. It's very nice. It's nice to see, and you said, refreshing, because sometimes you want to cut out all that corporate nonsense. Speaking of corporate nonsense, Ian, jobs, opportunities and events.
We don't have anything extra for you this week, folks, apart from just drawing your attention to the Tabletop Jobs group on Facebook that has lots of different jobs across the tabletop industry and across the world as well. So definitely worth checking out. We'll bring you other jobs, opportunities, events as they arise. And we just take a little moment just now to thank our patrons for their continued support, especially our executive producers, Kevin Bertram from Fort Circle Games, James Naylor from Naylor Games, and Sean Newman from the Gamelot team. Thank you very much for continued support of the cast at that level. You can join them for just $1 a month on our Patreon. And there are various other ways to support us, as well as various merchandise you can buy that where we get a little cut. Several of my RPG pieces have links to Drive Through where we get a little bit cut of that. And you can also go to FanRoll if you like fancy dice and accessories as well. There's a link to our affiliate code in the show notes. But Jamie, I'm sorry, it's time to die.
What? What?
Yeah, I've had enough of you.
That's fine. I'm leaving. I'm not going to be here next time anyway. I'm going to be up in, wait a minute, Orkney. That's it. I'll be up in Orkney.
You're not sure?
I'm not sure. I can't remember. I'm in Shetland one week and Orkney the next. I can't remember.
Get on with it.
Oh, I'll get on with it. Fine. I had Monopoly and like Cluedo stuff, and I had lots of stuff for you. Like, you know, versions of games. But just before we were going to start recording, we found this fantastic story. Well, last time we finished with a story about Monopoly coming to the silver screen, and we're still sticking with tabletop and the visual media. According to the entertainment magazine Variety, a deal has reportedly been struck between TriStar Pictures, owned by Sony, Sony Pictures Television, and Hasbro Entertainment over the film and TV rights for the murder mystery Cluedo, or Clue in America. Of course, they're calling it Clue. Anyway, this is not the first time Cluedo has leapt off the board. There are touring stage shows, there were game shows, there was a mini-series in 2011, and of course this is all an excuse for me to talk about the most famous version, and I would say the best version, and one of the best game-to-film adaptations. That's right, board game and video game. This one is one of the best adaptations. Clue, the 1985 film. It released with three different endings. Two of which are okay, one of which is the proper ending, and it's really good. The cast, brilliant. It is a really tight, funny comedy. I would so highly recommend it. Go watch Clue if you can, like now or when you get home or whatever. Watch it. It's great. Now,
did they not do one of those like live entertainment-y sort of experience-y things down in London with Clue as well? Because there was a Monopoly one, but weren't they going to be doing a Cluedo one as well?
I don't know if they've done a Cluedo yet. Okay, they might be. They might be working on it now.
Yeah,
yeah. They might be working on it or on it now. But yeah, now because a deal has been struck. We've got no idea when that's coming down the line. Basically, it's the same as last times, where right, okay, Lucky Chap has decided to get on board. It could be 10 odd years. It could be
five. Oh, yeah.
It could.
Who knows?
But another story, because we've had, oh, Risk could be a TV show. Oh, Cluedo could be a TV show or a film. Basically, what I'm telling you is go watch Clue, because it's really good. I mean, the cast is like Tim Curry, Madeline Kahn, Martin Mull, who was, if you don't know, he was the principal in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It was Christopher Guest. I think it's Christopher Guest. David St. Hubbins in Spinal Tap. Christopher Lloyd. There is just some brilliant performances in there. It is so funny. I would highly recommend it. And make sure you watch all three endings because they're all good.
Anyway, folks, thank you very much for listening and listening to Jamie go on and on and on about Clue. If you like, if you listen to, apart from that bit, then the best thing to tell us about
it. I haven't got much, Ian. Name a good board game film that is not Clue. I'm sorry, you cannot.
I mean, fair. What was it? Battleship was terrible. Anyway, the best way to help us out is to share the podcast and drop us a review and rating on iTunes. You can also follow Oliver, who can be with us this week, at tabletopgamesblog.com. You're welcome to join our community on our Discord, and we'll put an invite in the show notes. On Blue Sky, we're giantbrain.co.uk. Instagram and Facebook, also the Giant Brain, so just search for us there. Our website is giantbrain.co.uk, and you can email us about anything on the show, or if you'd like to share any stories in confidence with us, it's giantbrainuk@gmail.com. Thanks very much, and we'll see you in a couple weeks' time. Bye for now.
Bye, everyone.